I've known about this church for a long time. I grew up in Houston, Texas, where my father was the minister of the Bama Road Church of Christ. We moved there in 1972 to start that church, and that was really my entire childhood. I left to come to ACU from that church, and so the history, or my history in Churches of Christ, has been a lifetime journey, one that has served me so incredibly well. You know, but if you're a preacher's kid like I was, then you often hear your father from the pulpit when I wasn't asleep on the pew in my mom's lap when I was little, tell the same preacher jokes, right? And stories. They kind of recycle those things. And so one of my dad's favorite that he would tell was of the mom who went into her son's bedroom on a Sunday morning, turned on his light, and said, "Son, get out of bed. It's time to go to church." He sits up in bed and says, "Mom, I'm not going." And she says, "Will you give me one good reason why you're not going?" He said, "I'll do better than that. I'll give you three. Number one, those people at church don't like me. And number two, I don't really like them either. And number three, I hate getting all dressed up." He thought about that for a minute. He said, "Well, son, I'm going to give you three good reasons why you're going to get your rear end up out of bed and get to church. Number one, I want you to be in church. Number two, God wants you to be in church. And number three, son, you're the preacher." On a more serious note, I mentioned I left for ACU in 1987. I studied accounting, became a CPA, and so right there, that's the bad news for you today. Your preacher is an accountant. Have you guys heard the story about the one fun accountant? Yeah, I haven't either. You know, there are three types of accountants in the world: those that can count and those that can't. I had the most amazing experience at Abilene Christian University that anyone could possibly have. And I know some of you familiar faces here in the room could say the same thing. Yeah, I found people that believed in Phil Schubert. They saw things in me that I didn't see in myself. They caused me to ask the big questions about life and identity and faith and who I wanted to be and why. So I count it to be a great honor. I get to be in a role where I get to get up every day and go to work and try to ensure that same experience for our students who are following in your footsteps. I would tell you that the number one challenge that we face today with our young people is helping them find their identity in the right things in Jesus. Quite a bit of research out there, and one of the most startling things I've come across points to possibly the number one factor in shaping the identity of a young person 12 to 21 years of age. You know what they cite? Physical appearance. So therein lies our work. We live in a world where the world puts so many things in front of us to try to get us to chase them and find an identity in all the things that don't matter. I think the greatest work, without any shadow of a doubt, that we can be about at ACU is helping our students find their identity in Jesus and in Him alone. I think that starts with helping them develop a faith that is enduring. Because an enduring faith over time forms identity. So what constitutes an enduring faith? Well, to explore that today, We're going to look to the book of Hebrews. Our text is Hebrews 11, 29, 39. And so to remind us of Hebrews, it's written by a Jewish Christian to other Jewish Christians. So many had begun to follow Jesus at this time, many of the Jews, and it was a hard journey. They were enduring tremendous hardship in their life, discrimination and financial hardship, persecution, and they're weary. And so Hebrews is a book written to encourage them in their journey of faith, to stay with it, to keep moving forward. And the approach that he takes in writing the book is to remind them of their great faith heroes that have come before them. I'm going to read. By faith, the people passed through the Red Sea as on dry land, but when the Egyptians tried to do so, they were drowned. By faith, the walls of Jericho fell. The army had marched around them for 7 days. By faith, the prostitute Rahab, because she welcomed the spies, was not killed with those who were disobedient. And what more shall I say? I do not have time to tell you about Gideon, Barak, Samson, and Jephthah, about David and Samuel and the prophets, who through faith conquered kingdoms, administered justice, and gained what was promised, who shut the mouths of lions, quenched the fury of the flames, and escaped the edge of the sword, whose weakness was turned into strength, and who became powerful in battle and routed foreign armies. Women received back their dead, raised to life again, and then notice this transition. There were others who were tortured, refusing to be released so that they might gain an even better resurrection. Some faced jeers and flogging and even chains and imprisonment. They were put to death by stoning. They were sawed in two. They were killed by the sword. Went about in sheepskins and goatskins, destitute, persecuted, and mistreated. The world was not worthy of them. They wandered in the deserts and mountains, living in caves and in holes in the ground. These were all commended for their faith. So the Hebrew writer is basically going through a who's who list of their heroes, reminding them of God's constant provision for their journey. He knows that enduring faith is not abstract. He knows it's formed by real experiences and real stories that please God. Rich stories of faith, stories of triumph and tragedy. Stories of conquering and suffering. Examples from those who've gone before that highlight God's amazing faithfulness and His goodness. And He knows they need these stories to be reminded. See, enduring faith, the faith that remembers. This is a picture of a guy by the name of Serge Gasser. Some of you probably know his story. He grew up in Rwanda. It was right in the middle of the genocide between the Hutus and the Tutsis. At the age of 8, and that conflict was at its height. He and his family, along with many of their neighbors, retreated to their church to hide from the Hutu army. But they weren't successful because the Hutu army found them. He watched his family at the age of 8 be butchered in front of him. The only way he escaped with his life was to run out the back door of the church. And he ran, he would say, for hours before he ever looked back, never even knowing where he was going. The amazing story is that he ended up at Abilene Christian University. Guess what? He was a track star at ACU. And he found a loving God who helped him understand what it meant to forgive those that had created such great pain for him in his life. Today, Serge and his amazing wife have a ministry in Rwanda. Some of you probably support it. That ministers to over 3,000 children. It's called Rwanda Children if you want to look it up. But you see, Serge thought that his story of faith was so important that he wrote a book because he wants to remember and he wants others to be inspired. It's called My Day to Die. Whose faith stories have shaped your journey? I bet there's a lot in this church going back to 1939. Can you imagine those first 5 years and what was going on in our country? Who knows those stories? Both personally and as a community. Who's telling those stories, more importantly? I think we can always do better telling and retelling the rich stories of faith that have shaped our lives as individuals and as communities of faith. Enduring faith is a faith that remembers the stories of God's goodness and commits to pass them on to the next generation. Next, enduring faith is a courageous faith. I often tell our students at Abilene Christian University, your best days are ahead, but so are your worst. And most of you know exactly what I mean because you've lived it. When the train comes off the track, when everything that provides comfort and security and stability is swept right out from underneath you, your life begins to spiral out of control. You remember that phrase right about verse 35? And there were others, right? We had this long list of triumphant victories. Then there were others. Here's the thing. Nobody wants to be in the here and there were others category. Right? Now we want to be in the triumphant group, the ones that overcome and come out on top because of our faith, but that's not the way life works, is it? You know what the most common command in the Bible, mentioned more than any other command? You might be surprised. It's not love God. It's not love your neighbor. Don't be afraid. The only reason that don't be afraid appears so many times in biblical text is because God knows our lives are going to be full of hardship, and He never suggests an absence of hardship, but He always commits to an abiding presence. I love some of the images and thoughts of author Jonathan Martin in his book, Surviving Your Shipwreck Without Losing Your Soul. He paints a picture out of Acts 27 when Paul, as a prisoner, is on a ship sailing somewhere across the Adriatic Sea. God sends an angel to Paul. You may remember the story. He tells Paul, you're going to endure an incredible storm, and it's going to destroy the ship that's carrying you, but you're going to be spared. Scripture says there was no sun or stars for days, hurricane winds, and on the 14th day, the ship was completely obliterated. The good news from the angel, you're not going to die. The bad news is the ship that's carrying you, providing protection from the elements, safety and comfort on this massive ocean, it's going to be dashed to pieces. I want to be clear losing your ship is no small thing. To lose the ground beneath your feet, the stories you've told yourself and others, to lose what protected you from the elements, to lose your ship is to lose everything that kept you afloat. Be cast into the merciless sea, to be tossed about by the raging wind, ravaged by the blazing sun, subject to whatever eerie creatures lurk below the darkness. Some of you have lost your ship. You see, you can lose your ship, your home with all the pictures inside, your family, your job, your health, your reputation, your most defining relationship, and still not lose you, your faith, the thing that keeps you most grounded in life. Remember the phrase, all were commended for their faith? See, the Hebrew writer knew that he was preaching to many who were right in the middle of a raging storm. They were terrified. I love what Martin says next. Quote, I wouldn't recommend a shipwreck to anyone, but we're all going to go through one. And I can't help but keep coming back to a mysterious truth that I've heard over and over from those who survived their shipwrecks. That on the other side, that there's a stronger, deeper, richer life, a better you because of God's grace, that on the other side of the storm that tears you to pieces is a capacity to love without doubt, to live without fear, to be something infinitely more than the man or woman that you were before it happened. Testament. God's grace. You see, God may not remove our hardships in this life, but He can always redeem them. So an enduring faith is a courageous faith. It's a faith that allows us to face the storm standing tall with our arms wide open, trusting that God will use our very darkest moments to shape us into who He wants us to be. Finally, enduring faith, the faith that finishes. Sometimes following Jesus can be exhilarating and sometimes it can be exhausting. Hebrew writers addressing those who are in the exhausted camp. They've endured hardship and pain, pushed to the periphery, discriminated against, seen their families suffer. Some are questioning, do they have the will to go on? Some of us here today have felt that way, or maybe we feel that way now. To be clear, the writer is not telling stories of people that never got exhausted, right? He's telling stories of people that despite their exhaustion, didn't quit. The next chapter in Hebrews 12:12, after he finishes, he says this, so take a grip with your tired hands and strengthen your weak knees. He's calling them to suck it up. He's calling them to finish. A little side note, I think it's super interesting that these are not just stories of triumph. Remember the "there were others" phrase? These are stories of triumph and tragedy. So to be clear, whether you're exhausted from triumph or tragedy, you don't get a pass. You don't get to take the exit ramp. No. We're all commended for our faith. And the reason? Because we don't quit. We choose to finish. Sometimes I think that those of us who've triumphed in life or reached a point of blessing and comfort think it's time to rest, to move into the slow lane. This passage is a great reminder that the message to finish isn't just for those who are in the middle of a fierce battle. I believe that God has intended that for the church, that we run together in our journey. We finish the race together. This is a picture of John Stephen Aquari. In the 1968 Olympics in Mexico City, he was a marathon runner. and he finished dead last, more than an hour after the last runner had entered the stadium, because he got hurt somewhere along the way. But he was determined to finish. And in the interview, he comes into the stadium. There are people cleaning up an hour after the last runner. There happened to be a news outlet there. They interview him and say, "Why in the world did you keep running?" He said, "Well, my country didn't send me here to start the race. Sent me here to finish." 1992 Olympics in Barcelona, Spain, Derek Redmond, 400-meter sprinter, was in a qualifying event. Right in the middle of the race, he pulls a hamstring and collapses to the track. It's one of the most amazing images in all of sports history, when before anyone could do anything, his father jumps over the rail of the stadium, runs out onto the track, picks up his son in arm in arm. They go across the finish line. He knew that the finish matters. In closing, I don't want to have great faith in God. I want to have faith in a great God. A God that can calm the storm, part the sea, close the mouths of lions, and redeem the world. Because that's exactly who he is. He's a God that brings beauty from brokenness, healing from pain, and life where death has taken over. I want to believe in a God who will help me remember that the story of his goodness is continual. That we can find courage in the face of trial, and that we can finish our race. I don't begin to know where you are today in your race. Maybe you need to be reminded of the great stories of faith, or maybe you need to be the storyteller for someone else. Maybe you need courage to face the storm that is your life right now. Or maybe you can walk hand in hand, giving courage to someone else. Maybe you need someone to help you finish. Maybe you need to jump over the rail, go and help someone else finish. See, we serve a great God whose goodness overflows. So let's take a grip with our tired hands and strengthen our weak knees. Let's keep on running.